This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This Friday marks the first anniversary of the bombing of Oklahoma City's federal building, which killed nearly 170 people. My guest, Morris Dees, is the co-founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which monitors hate groups, the militia movement, and other anti-government extremists, and uses the courts to oppose these groups. Dees is the center's chief trial counsel. 6 months before the Oklahoma City bombing, Morris Dees wrote a letter to Attorney General Janet Reno warning that white supremacists had joined forces with militias, creating a recipe for disaster. In a recent letter to Reno, Dees warned that the threat of domestic terrorism has increased sharply in the past year. The center just issued a new report on the threat of anti-government extremists called False Patriots. Dees has a new book about militias called Gathering Storm. I asked Morris Dees if he's expecting any terrorist attacks this Friday.
You know, I would hope not. There have been some already this past week that the FBI and others are linking to these so-called super patriots, bombing of a bank and robbery of a bank and a newspaper in Spokane, Washington, and the bombing of a federal employee's car in California. I would think that at least as far as federal buildings are concerned, the security will be so tight that it'll be difficult for someone to be as brazen as the bombers in Oklahoma City were and just be able to drive a truck up in front of it and blow it up. I don't think you'll see that happening. But there are other targets that these people aim for and talk about in all their material, such as railroad switching stations, railroad trestles, the actual assassination of federal employees, federal judges. So who knows what they might do? I have no intelligence or information that we've gathered to show that anybody's going to do anything on that given day.
Coinciding with the anniversary of Waco and the Oklahoma City bombing is the Montana Freeman story, where they're still refusing to surrender to the FBI that has surrounded their compound. Had you been monitoring the Montana Freeman before the situation started?
Yes, we had. In fact, I have some information and some background about the Freeman and about the kind of strange religious sect that they follow, the Christian Identity religious sect. These people have been portrayed in the press by some who are not really knowledgeable about them as being just, you know, disgruntled farmers who are just simply white-collar criminals who've written a few bad checks and et cetera. But they're much, much more than that. I was able to get a tape of a speech of some of the leaders at that compound about 2 weeks before the standoff. And the leader, who's now been arrested, stood up in front of the group and said, "It's a race war. It's a race war against God's chosen people, whites, and Satan's children, the Jews." And he talked about their common law court they'd held and the order they had issued in the court, and it essentially was that anybody who interfered with them would be killed. So they're a very dangerous group, and I'm not saying we should go in with guns blazing to get them out, but they're not some little isolated group like some of the media has pointed out.
What do you think of the manner in which the FBI has been handling the Montana Freeman?
I think it's been exemplary. I think the FBI obviously committed gross injustices out at Randy Weaver situation in Ruby Ridge. I'm not sure how the chips will come out ultimately on Waco. You can do a lot of money morning quarterback, and I don't think Koresh ever intended to come out. The FBI waited a long time, and I believe that maybe possibly he had something to do with burning that building like Jim Jones did in Guyana. But as far as the situation out there, I think the pressure is coming from the public and the news media to end the standoff. It's like we're such a television generation. We want our wars fought within a short time, like the Desert Storm War and the Falkland War were fought on television time almost. They were covered from, you know, battlefield to battlefield. And here, I hope the FBI doesn't allow that pressure to cause them to feel pressure. On the other hand, I don't think that these people should be allowed to thumb their nose at lawful authority, because they aren't just simple white-collar criminals. They've threatened the lives of federal judges. They're seriously armed people, and they're committing a kind of a paper terrorism writing of bad checks and the size they're doing against the federal government, and also in issuing these common law warrants and writs that they use to clog up the court system.
Your group, the Southern Poverty Law Center, has issued a new report called False Patriots about the threat of anti-government extremists. How do you think the militia movement has changed in the past year since the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City?
I think it's gotten more secretive. It's broken up into smaller, what they call secret cells, under a leaderless resistance concept that's been promoted by some of the leaders in this movement. The fence sitters who were horrified at Oklahoma City have shied away. The people that we saw on television, like John Trockman of the Militia of Montana and Olson and Southwell of the Michigan Militia, essentially today just generals of an army of one. They don't speak for, in fact, they're even laughed at by the real thinkers in this movement, the people that are actually promoting and encourage bombings and killings and domestic terrorism. I read an article in Time magazine that's out this week saying that the FBI has a task force set up that where they sit around once a week and talk about this issue, and that they've encouraged agents to go and, you know, have a beer with the John Trockmans. In fact, they mentioned him and they had his picture there. Well, he may talk to the FBI, but the people that are the dangerous ones, like those held up in the Freeman's compound, won't talk to the FBI. And I think that's the problem that we have in monitoring this movement. They don't like federal authority, and they've become more kind of underground.
Why have Trockman and other leaders who we got to know last year lost whatever credibility they had?
Well, I'm not sure they had any credibility last year. I think the media just ran out and found somebody that, you know, with a coat and tie that could talk about the militia. And they tried to present a view that the militia was like a giant neighborhood watch. That kind of was belied by some of the militia publications that sold books.
When you say that, you mean Trockman and the other militia leaders who were interviewed?
Yes. Those people positioned themselves as being friends of law enforcement, as being individuals that were interested in helping old ladies cross the street, so to speak, and working with the National Guard. They're trying to put a face on the militias that I know the militias don't deserve, and that's not how they operate. But the real leaders in this movement quickly distance themselves from the Trockmans. I'm talking about people like Louis Beam, who wrote the book that is entitled Leaderless Resistance, and how these groups should break up into small secret cells, commit their acts of domestic terrorism when they feel like they're moved to do it. And if you catch that group, you don't break down the whole group.
Louis Beam, who you mentioned as being the founder, the creator of this strategy of leaderless resistance with secret cells, he's a former Klansman, former Grand Dragon of the Texas Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. He formed a paramilitary group called the Texas Emergency Reserve. You say he was later affiliated with the Aryan Nations. This idea of the leaderless resistance with secret cells, how can you tell that that idea is spreading?
All you have to do is really look at the militia type or patriot type crimes that have taken place, and they weren't the results of an organized group like the Militia of Montana committing a crime. If you assume that Mr. McVeigh and Mr. Nichols and Mr. Fortier and maybe others with them are guilty of the crime, that would be one of these so-called like spontaneous or secret cells. People who have a common belief that the government is evil, that they feel an obligation to protect our citizens from this government before our rights are taken away. They subscribe to all the publications. They read the books like the Turner Diaries, which is really a recipe or a blueprint for how to blow up federal buildings and cause a race war. All these things McVeigh did. And that's what Louis Beam says. He says, look, we don't need in this movement a general at the top. We need to keep our people educated as to who the enemy is and provide them with the materials that will motivate them and to move to action whenever they feel like doing it.
You describe the Patriot movement as a potpourri of the American right, including Nazis, skinheads, Ku Klux Klan members, freemen, militant opponents of abortion rights, followers of Christian identity. And you say it was after Ruby Ridge that they really unified around the hatred and paranoia against the government. How separate were these groups before that? Were they much less aligned than they are now?
Much less aligned. I think the thing that brought them together under the leadership of Louis Beam and Pete Peters, Reverend Pete Peters, who is a major identity minister in the country, was the incident at Ruby Ridge. In fact, a meeting of 160 of these people was held in Estes Park, Colorado, in 1992, 2 months after Ruby Ridge. And at that meeting, Louis Beam was the keynote speaker. And he said to that group in a very fiery speech that we are the enemy of the government. It doesn't matter whether you're a fundamentalist, a sovereign, a freeman, a Second Amendment advocate, whatever you are, we are the enemy. And those men with black boots and helmets are going to come kick your door down. And they're not going to ask, what are you? Which group do you subscribe to? And then also we had the Brady Bill passed and the ban on assault weapons. And those two things fired up the militia movement and brought into it a broad base of people that would never have associated themselves with the Louis Beams of the world, the neo-Nazis, the William Pierce, the man who wrote the Turner Diaries, would never associate themselves. And so what happened was Beam and others in this movement who've been there for years changed their rhetoric. They stopped talking openly against Jews and blacks and started talking against the government. And the government became the whipping boy, the scapegoat.
Some people allege that there are similarities or connections between the far right of the Republican Party and the extremist anti-government groups that you monitored. Do you think that there are any such connections?
Well, I don't think that there are any connections between the Louis Beams and the world and the Christian identity and those who are in the far right leadership of the Republican Party. I think there's an enormous connection, though, in ideology. When Pat Buchanan continues his campaign because he says it's for the very soul of the Republican Party, I think what he's really saying is what he believes is for the very soul of the American country or our government. And that translates to a lot of these militia people and maybe to Pat Buchanan as, whose America is it? When Pat Buchanan says we should build a wall in effect along the border to keep out these Hispanics and Mexicans coming across the border and immigrants, he's saying what you hear so many of these far-right people in the militia say, and that is that we don't want any more non-whites in this country. Maybe it translates to that in their mind. When Mr. Buchanan says that we don't want to send our jobs south of the border through various kinds of trade treaties, the militia people say the American dream has been destroyed because these non-white people in third world countries are taking jobs that Christian Aryan white people should have. When Pat Buchanan slams banks and big businesses, that plays right into the militia's belief that there's some Jewish Zionist conspiracy to control the banks and the monetary systems in the world. So they certainly get encouragement from the far right in the Republican Party.
Morris Dees is the co-founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center. His new book is called Gathering Storm, America's Militia Threat. Dees will be back with us in the second half of our show. This is Fresh Air.